Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/AAA to save 20% off any order. And by VideoBlocks, by StoryBlocks. Get all the high-quality stock video, audio, and images you can imagine for $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/Android today. Hello and welcome to All About Android episode 343. This is recorded on Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I am Florence Ion.
Hello, Flo.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I've had yerba mate, so I'm very caffeinated.
On the scale of like 1 to very caffeinated, whatever that number is,
as we sat down to do the show. So I just like, I didn't think that all the sips I was taking while driving here,
cumulative,
was like, I didn't feel anything. And then as soon as I sat down, I'm like, woo,
it stacks.
It's going to be fun today.
It stacks and hits you like a ton of bricks. Ron is obviously, he's not here today. We're sad that we're missing him, but he should be back next week. Joining us today is the triumphant, I think it's pretty triumphant anyways, return of JC Bagnell of PocketNow.com and the new show, Newegg Now. How you doing, JC?
No. I'm on board with calling this triumphant. I'm stoked to be here. This has been a good media day for me. I did a little TV this morning and joining you guys in the afternoon.
I saw you. You've been on the same morning show as all my favorite housewives.
Yes.
What morning show? What was it?
Good Day LA.
Good Day LA. Yeah, they had me on to talk about unlocked phones, which is insane because it's really hard to get anything on TV that's not about an iPhone.
Yeah.
True that.
So unlocked phones. Wow, that's actually kind of a nerdy TV.
It was. I mean, they gave me a full 5 minutes. And so I did this whole like price breakup. And these are phones under 300 and phones over 600. And it was a lot of fun to put together. I think if you go to the Fox 11 page, you can catch that. I think they finally got it posted.
Did they ask you if it breaks the warranty to unlock a bootloader? Or like, did they go there?
Oh, man, we barely got through just the explanation of, well, you can buy a phone not through your carrier.
I would have been very impressed if they had gone there, if they had done that kind
of thing. But they were actually pretty legit. Like, I had a Razer phone, my Mate 10 Pro, BlackBerry Key 1. And the second I pulled out the BlackBerry, like, all of the anchors, like, started fawning all over it. Like, they'd never seen this phone before. They all got really excited about it. They all had fond memories of their BlackBerries, like, this is exactly the kind of like conversation that I think has been lacking from smartphones for a while.
Yeah. I would say this is the kind of conversation that's been lacking from mainstream media.
Oh, definitely.
I really feel like it's been lacking where we just aren't talking about like these different price tiers that exist. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of the technology is being sold to you like cars. You have your high-end cars that come with all this extra stuff that you're paying for that you really don't need. You have your mid-range cars that are good on gas, pretty to look
at. Good all-arounders.
You know, you can have your low tiers, and this is the same with technology, and I think in lots of realms. And it's good for us to be doing this because we are informing people.
Yeah, well, it was a great part of the conversation where I used that exact metaphor talking about a Moto E.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's got a very fuel-efficient engine and a huge gas tank.
Yeah.
And it costs under $200, so you're going to love it.
Exactly. Fuel-efficient kind of engine, which means, you know, it'll
you
go
don't
fast,
play
but maybe
game.
Up the hill, it'll chug
might
a little.
Slow down at times, depending on what you're
still
doing.
Still going to make it up there.
It looks like a Pinto, but we'll forgive it.
Come on, nothing looks
kidding.
Like a Pinto
I'm just
in
kidding.
This day
not,
age. You can't do that anymore. Well,
I'm totally kidding.
Well, I was actually kind of excited to show, like, you know, you're going to spend around that $200 price point and it's not going to be made out of some flimsy, cheap feeling plastic. It's like all of them have fingerprint sensors now. Like a lot of manufacturers have really stepped up their game on all price tiers, which is really exciting.
Yep. And all of these things that used to be a premium tier element has now kind of trickled down to the lower tiers and everything. Makes you wonder what we're seeing now that we're going to see in a couple of years hitting these lower tier phones, because that just seems to be the way of the smartphone world. Tell us a little bit about Newegg Now,
please.
Yes. Okay. So Newegg Now is a new weekly show being produced by Newegg Studios down in City of Industry. And they hired on Trisha Hershberger. And Trisha was kind enough to say, hey, if I need a co-host for this, I know a guy who doesn't suck. And so she put in the word for me. And we've been co-hosting the show for 3 weeks now. And we're trying to see if we can shake up just sort of your normal like deals and specials promos kind of show. And so we're having a lot of fun coming up with new like gaming head to heads and PC hardware, gaming hardware, and a lot of DIY. So people who are interested in building their own systems, I kind of liken it to like a Daniel Tosh routine. Like, we have to start out really broad, like, what is overclocking? And by the end of it, we're talking about, like, you know, RAM latency and how to get into your UEFI to control your RGB RAM, customization and water cooling blocks and stuff like that. So it's been exciting for me because I've been spending so much time in mobile. I'm getting to come back to something that, you know, I got into technology doing, which was building my own workstations and gaming PCs. And so it's just kind of blending all of my sort of passions and doing another live broadcast, which live is a lot of fun. I like that rush of, you know, like, I'm doing this without a net. We got to go.
Yep.
And this computer might not boot up once I do it. So we're just going to have to run with it if it doesn't work.
Right on. Yeah, especially when you're doing how-tos and stuff like that. That's where you start to see things. That's where you really see the pressure of live, because you go into any of those things with your fingers crossed going, I hope I make it out alive. And
definitely. Oh, you guys are actually showing. We had a rep from Moto on to talk about Moto Mods. And it was like, I need to bite my tongue because I think I know about as much about your phone as you do. So I'll let you do the talking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's awesome. Excellent. Excellent stuff. Congratulations on the new show. That can be found at newegg.com/newegg now. All one word, go that URL and you can check out the new show. That's great. Congrats.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned Moto Mods. We're going to be talking
we've
got a mod. There's been a slow but steady trickle of new Moto Mods.
I even brought an old Moto phone, old last year, so you could see that it still works.
Nice. Backwards compatibility.
Well, that's what they said.
Yeah. So we're going to be going hands-on with that, the Moto Mod smart speaker. We've also got, JC's spent some time with the Huawei Mate 10 Pro. I've got here the Pixel Book that we can finally talk about.
So pretty in person, everyone. I just have to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's so pretty.
It's so nice.
It's so thin.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. I'm very curious about that piece of hardware.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It feels like a Pixel on the back.
I know. Speaking of Pixel, we've also
we're going to finally share our thoughts after
a few weeks with Pixel 2. I think we all have thoughts on that. Google is cracking down on accessibility services in Android. And Juan, you're going to talk a little bit about the big differences between headphone jack audio and USB-C audio, because there are some, you know, misunderstandings that people have that, you know, commonly repeated facts and fiction about this.
I even got to call you out a little bit, Jason.
Excellent.
It'll
All right, bring it on.
Fun chat.
Bring it on. I can take it. I always like to be learned.
Do it.
But before we get to that, it's time for the news, Victor.
Hopefully we're not in danger of any Google crackdowns, because here's the accessible Android news.
Oh, this week's news is accessible.
Jason?
Yes?
We didn't do the Oreos.
Man, okay, real quick.
I'm sorry to interrupt this broadcast.
Yeah, that was going
to
be
We forgot to do our Oreo test, and it is very important that we stick to routine.
Hey, Victor.
I feel partly responsible because you guys were so kind
in bringing up my stuff. No, it was not you at all. It was purely me being caffeinated.
All right. You know, there are some people that were watching that were like, yay, they skipped that part. And
I'm sorry to say, but we're not skipping it.
We're going to take a quick bite.
Would it be
I got to say, usually listening to the podcasts,
it's a breaking news. I think this is breaking news because we broke the show.
We broke the show.
That's awesome.
Today's treat is called the Triple Double Oreo. Have you ever heard of this one?
Oh, no.
This is like you can't make up your mind, so you get chocolate and you get vanilla, or what is that? Is that actual vanilla?
When did we get a Neapolitan?
Yeah, it's like Oreo. A Neapolitan, a little.
Okay, but a Neapolitan would be triple stack, and I'd be into that, yeah. Just saying, Oreo.
Yeah.
They're really
just
tall.
Just go all the way.
They're so tall,
gosh,
I don't want to eat it.
So thick.
Here, go ahead.
Yeah,
I'll grab one. Okay, I'm sorry, audio listeners.
Yeah, we're going to try and do this so it's not...
Okay, you guys chew. I'm going to vamp for you guys. I actually have to say, listening to the audio podcast that you guys put out, I have to commend you for doing such a good job of not chewing directly on top of the microphones. As someone with a little misophonia, you guys do that pretty well.
Well, thank you. A, I appreciate the vamping. B, thank you, because we really try not to eat into the microphone, because I know how much people hate that. Personally, I'm one of those weird people that think it's hilarious. So, but I restrain myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, This is too much Oreo.
Yeah, it is.
This is too much Oreo.
I mean, it's just really thick.
I'm putting the kibosh. You can't do this. This is not okay.
It's like a Big Mac. It's like with the layer in the middle.
I don't want a Big Mac. There's a reason I don't eat Big Macs.
Well, there you go.
I mean, there's plenty of reasons.
Just kind of think it's kind of a bland flavor. So
it
I don't
doesn't.
Know.
It's just it's chalky and it's too much. This is a five. I agree.
Five.
But I'm gonna finish
middle
it
of the road
because Jason has the first news item.
All right. Thank you for that breaking news. Those of you who skipped that segment, welcome back. It's time for the actual news. Android's accessibility API, you may have realized this over the past couple of years, has been used to do a lot of very unique and interesting things on the operating system over the years. Examples, password management, LastPass for one, they would use that that accessibility API to overlay and insert passwords into the fields. Floating bubbles, I believe, were part of that. Certain tasker activities, Greenify, there's a whole bunch of apps that thrive because they have access to this API. Well, Google Play Store team recently emailed developers to say they must follow Google's guidelines for that API if they are to use it. A lot of these apps, they're using this not necessarily the way it was intended, not the way it was designed. This API is really geared for improving usability on the devices for people who might have different usability or disabilities that would prevent them from using their phone in the same way that everybody else would. So either vision or a whole lot of different functionalities within the API. But developers have been kind of repurposing this and using it in a different way. So this could affect the way a lot of top tier apps work. Could also be, by the way, and I think this is probably the reason that they're doing it, I would guess, is that it could be used for key logging. It can be used for nefarious purposes, because a lot of times it means putting an overlay on top of what you see, kind of intercepting taps, showing you different things than what's underneath it. So that might be a big driver for this. Google says developers must remove this permission within 30 days, and failure in that will result in app removal. So... I mean, is it, Juan, what do you think? Is it right of Google to suddenly crack down on this? Or do you think Google needs to also realize that there are apps that are doing interesting things with this API? Even though it's not by the book, it still makes Android better.
Don't we get the sense that Google's a little less interested in what developers are doing to make Android more interesting? I think we've been seeing Google kind of make a pivot towards trying to... kind of button up some of the issues that we've had with Google, like in how updates are rolled out, how security patches are rolled out. And I think one of the ways that we're gonna see that is by kind of closing up some of these issues. I mean, I know in the XDA article they said, well, LastPass probably isn't going to be affected, but that was a part of Oreo, was getting types of password managers integrated into the OS in a way that was sort of properly secured, not through some sort of, not, I don't want to use a word like misuse, but creative use of an API. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this head-to-head developer versus Google kinds of interactions as Google themselves are trying to make the play directly to consumers with their own products, and then sort of reining in what manufacturers can do with Android. I think it only makes sense that we're going to also see them start reining in developers on what they can do with Android.
Yeah, what do you think, Flo?
I don't think it's a developers versus Google situation at all. I think it's just Google trying to ensure that it's a smooth experience for everyone, ensure that those features are being used for what they are meant for, which is for people who need that extra feature on their Android interface. I mean, I was reading a couple of like just takes on Twitter about from various people just who, you know, mull about Android stuff, and a lot of them were saying along the lines of just, this is not, it's not like anti-developer, it's just, it's more pro-user, because it just makes, it makes, in the end, it makes things safer. And
yeah, how does Google know on an app-by-app basis when they're asking for permission or access to this API? How does Google know from its perspective that the developer that is requesting this access outside of their guidelines is doing it to present something that's useful to a user versus doing it because they have nefarious, you know, ideas for how to intercept or keylog?
Yeah, and I don't mean that I think Google's going to go after developers, but I mean, to, exactly to your point, Flo, because I completely agree, is the sense that a vast majority of people are probably interacting with Android in a very specific way. And that means a tiny minority of people are going to be affected by these types of security policies. Like, I've got a couple of friends that are really into Tasker. If Tasker is crippled in any way, they're going to be very upset. But they represent such a small piece of the overall Google pie, the Android pie, that we really do need to talk about Android as a consumer-facing product. You want to make sure that more people are protected. And unfortunately, that will mean stepping on some toes.
I agree. Android what they might be doing is, I'm assuming maybe LastPass got through, that Google is, they just have a team of people who are curating what the apps are doing. I imagine, I mean, this is an interesting dance, because we're basically talking about this store that's super open, like becoming more and more closed, and that within itself creates issues, because like that's hugely against the philosophy.
Maybe the legacy.
The legacy, that's the perfect word. It's the legacy of the Play Store, that it's just this open marketplace. But for Google to really become this like consumer powerhouse, it needs to put those protections in place the way that Apple has in the iTunes, or in the now Apple App Store. Protecting people from there being too many fart apps is like, it is a consumer protection in its own way.
No such thing as too many fart apps.
Because the thing is when you have lack of quality, that eventually permeates like through other avenues. And I mean, you are the company that you keep, okay, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're keeping bad apps around, you're keeping that company and emboldening that kind of company. And you don't want that around these parts. You want a nice, smooth experience.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, and that's been Google's big trend, and what they've been going towards. You know, and the Pixel devices is just one example of that. They're definitely kind of moving towards the Apple model,
and
let's say,
offering
which is going to upset a lot of Android faithful.
But I don't even think it's necessarily moving towards the Apple model. Just Google taking more ownership of their product.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And if you want to like go out of the box, that's still available to you. There are still forums out there. There's still ways that you can go and do your things. And maybe it is going to, maybe in the end, Tasker is going to be crippled. But is that like, is that going to matter for, you know, someone like my mom who has the money to spend on these things?
Or maybe what Google can also do, and I'm sure they're thinking about this also, is realize that developers are coming up with very interesting things to do with these devices. This API, as one example, is helping to facilitate that. Maybe this API isn't the right way to do that, but maybe Google realizes that there's opportunity to add, in its own controlled way, some official way for some of these things to happen and control it that way.
And in that case, then I think Google has a better opportunity to properly disclose when an app is calling that information, which I don't believe you do have using the accessibility API in this fashion. Like, why are you calling this piece of information, or why are you granting access to this part of the underlying structure? I can hope that, like what they did with password management, that they can eventually roll those kinds of services out to developers, looking at more advanced customization sort of behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Boom. We solved it.
We solved it. We solved it for Google. You know what else Google solved? Google solved the problem of wrangling the family together for dinner. Because now you can use your Google Home's broadcast feature to call out "Sweet" to everybody at home.
Ding, 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 ding.
Through the Google Homes that are connected inside your house. Now, I'm telling you, I'm definitely going to be an annoying parent. So the way this works is this broadcast feature is rolling out right now to Google Home units. It works in the same vein as any other command. You would say OKG, broadcast, then say whatever you want, played back on all the other devices in the house. It's basically like leaving a voice message to play back immediately, but it's playing back on the home devices that are in the house.
I kind of wanted it to be like live intercom.
I know. So you can have
family, it's time for dinner. Exactly. It's time to go to the dining room right now. Family, I'll see you there in a second.
It plays with a little ringing bell when you say it. I didn't try updating anything today, so I didn't get to try this out, but I'm definitely looking forward to. I just love that this is included. I don't have any reason to use it right now. Who am I going to wrangle the cat?
I don't have a big enough home for this, nor do I have one of these in every single room, although I plan on that by the end
of the holidays.
Well,
that's going to be great, because then you could just go, everybody, wake up, and then
it's
the girls
time to
wake
up.
You know, I thought that like this wouldn't be something, but it was literally 2 days ago. My wife's getting our daughter ready for bed, and I can hear my daughter kind of yelling, and I'm trying to call up like, hey, do you need some help? And my wife couldn't hear me at all. And I just kept thinking like, you know, if I could tap in to the speaker on, you know, my daughter's, we have one of those like nanny cams, and like, you'll use my phone to do this. And you're like, oh, but that's exactly what they're talking about with this Google Home thing. Like, I'm still nervous about ubiquitous microphones all throughout my house, but that was exactly the kind of use case that I think would have been beneficial.
Live intercom must be next. Just make it happen.
I am tired of the intercoms.
It's weird leaving a little voicemail.
They can't just be to the mansions in Bel Air, people. We all deserve intercoms because we all deserve to not yell at our family from across the other side of the house. I'm just saying.
I need that Star Trek Next Gen communication system everywhere I go.
Yes. Agreed. all right. So how about a little good news, bad news from Google I.O. earlier this year? First, the bad news.
Jeez.
Google said at I.O. earlier this year that it was working with two companies on standalone Daydream headsets. You may remember that, with inside out tracking, or what they called World Sense. That would be HTC and Lenovo. However, now Google and HTC have announced that HTC will no longer be creating this Daydream headset. HTC obviously had plans of their own because they have released or started to unveil the Vive Focus in the Chinese market, for starters. They showed this off at the Vive Developer Conference in Beijing, I think in the last day or two. So that's kind of this, but without Daydream and devoted to Vive. So bypassing Daydream on the standalone headset, Lenovo's still in the game as far as Google is saying. So I don't know when we're going to see Lenovo's standalone VR Daydream headset, but I'm very curious because I think Inside Out really transforms the platform and I want to see how it goes.
I wonder what happened.
I don't know.
Wonder what happened. Maybe it was just like, hey, HTC, you've got too much on your plate.
I have the conspiracy theory. I think the conspiracy theory is with HTC's smartphone manufacturing division, the 2,000 people that went over to the Pixel team, that there could be some potential long play where Google isn't going to just buy out HTC like they did Motorola, face the backlash of that kind of an acquisition. But this would also give them time to figure out what to do with Vive, which is its own separate department or division of HTC. And we'd be looking at them potentially severing that part of the business off. You don't want that too entwined over at Google if they're looking at that. And at the same time, we know that Lenovo's really been on the pulse with Google AR and VR tech. And they just came out with their AR Jedi game too.
Oh, that's
so
right.
They would be the right partner moving forward for that kind of a thing. I think there's room in there. Like if I'm taking my tinfoil hat off for just a minute to say that this could be a longer play in what HTC is doing to divide up resources. And then also what Google might be willing to acquire from them.
Interesting. So a long-term Google acquisition of the Vive assets somewhere down the line, potentially.
Yeah, you can't do it all at once because, you know, we saw how that kind of happened, and then Google would have redundancies. I'm sure there are right. other partners in play. Okay. There's debt to consider, all of those things that happen with businesses. But yeah. you start off with that core smartphone division. You kind of test the waters on that, and then you get your tendrils in there in another way, and you can kind of work your way through
tendrils.
That.
Good vocab
tendrils.
Word.
Yeah. Tendrils.
I've got to have a cool word for you every time I'm on Flo. Formidable was the last
That's such a good word. Formidable
tendrils.
So good.
Formidable tendrils actually has a nice ring to it. Formidable tendrils. That's an option. Okay. Hey, how about the good news? If that's bad news, let's have some good news here. Google also talked at Google I/O about TensorFlow Lite for bringing machine learning capabilities more into the phone. So all the stuff doesn't have to happen in the cloud. It can happen on the device locally. And the developer preview went live today. The initial release focuses on three training models to start that developers can start to play around with. MobileNet, which is vision models across 1,000 object classes, all executed on the mobile device. There's Inception V3, which is image recognition, kind of like MobileNet, but with much higher accuracy. And as a result, a larger size comes along with that accuracy. And then finally, Smart Reply, which we're all very used to, one-touch replies. But all that happening on the device, although it doesn't have to, it could run on the CPU if there aren't custom silicon to actually work with that, like Pixel Visual Core, for example, that 8.1 is going to activate. And this would be cross-platform. So the runtime would work on Android and iOS. Our phones getting even smarter. I mean, this is just kind of this is the direction that things are headed right now with AI being such a huge deal, right?
It's so huge.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go.
I know, we were just like...
Okay. Sorry, yes, I set agree. Up too much.
Well, because we know that eventually robots are going to take over the world, and we don't really want to acknowledge it now. We'd like to continue enjoying our human being species.
For just as long as we can.
Precisely.
I, for one, welcome our robot overlords. And
I'm not there with you yet, JC. I'm resisting.
The welcome mat is not out for the robot overlords.
Not
at
my
Flo's
house. Not at my house. Deep in the burbs. But you know what is...
At your house?
Not on my house. Okay. Chill. Is this email, but it is here in this house, in the Twit house.
Yeah.
The Twit brick house.
I think so.
Number two. So we've got an email from, I'm sorry for that transition. I really tried.
Don't worry about it.
We've got an email from James. James writes in, I have no problem spending a bunch of money on tech. But when flagship season rolled around this year, I really wasn't truly excited about the value proposition of the current batch from the Samsung bloatware batch. The problems reported with the Pixel 2 XL. And
there was a little aside there that I probably should have pulled
aside.
Out.
Then, ellipses. Then I took a second look at the Essential phone. With the recent price drop and the fact that they have done a lot of software updates on it, recently I had a glimmer of hope. I got it 2 weeks ago, and while there are still a few little software bugs I have noticed, none of them rise above the minor annoyance or make me regret spending only $500 on a flagship quality device that I would have never heard about if I didn't listen to you.
Aw, shucks.
That's us. Also, given the cadence of updates I have been getting from Essential is better than what I even got from Googs, from the Googs on the 6P, giving me reason to hope that as bugs continue to get squashed, the experience will only continue to improve. Thank you for providing excellent coverage on the whole Android ecosystem and not just the big guys, and Essential owes you for at least one sale.
All right, James. Nice.
Well, hot off the heels of that Essential email is actually this afternoon, while I was en route over here to Petaluma, Essential announced the open beta for developers to try out Android Oreo for size on your Essential phones. So you can download that if you're a developer, see how your apps work on the Essential phone. Fun news, last week I actually went to Palo Alto the day after we filmed Twits last Wednesday, and I got to speak to Rebecca Zavin, the VP of Software Development at Essential.
Cool.
She came over from Google. Now, I've got a full interview going up later this week at AndroidAuthority.com, but I did pick out a couple of snippets from my interview with her last week just about the update. So this is a beta for folks who are enthusiasts. Essential said that they think they want to do that beta, and that while they finish out the balance of issues on getting it right for the consumers, they're handing it out to developers, kind of help them suss out the kinks before it's fully launched. And they also said that camera updates are going to be coming through the Play Store, not through the software update. So if you are waiting for those camera updates, you're going to get them through an app update, so you don't have to worry about whether or not you're on the latest build with developers, because Essential is going to take care of you. And actually, the way that Rebecca explained it, the two teams, the software team and the camera team, they've both been sort of sequestered out from each other, so that camera's on its own development track and software's on its own development track. So it's kind of nice to be able to resources where they need to go.
That's really smart. I was a big fan of when HTC started peeling pieces off of their software and putting them up in the Play Store.
That's a good point. I forgot that they were one of the first third parties to really take that route back in the day.
Yeah, and actually you can find that app in the Play Store. It's just called, this doesn't make any sense, it's called Camera. Anyways, it's by Essential Products. Hey, they named it appropriately. Apparently those updates are going to be coming through, and at least they're paying attention to one of the big complaints that happen and addressing it. They made a lot of changes. What can I say? At $700, it was hard to recommend the device. At $500, I mean, it kind of becomes my mid-range pick at this very moment. But as you know, the landscape changes very quickly, but it's a lot of phone for $500.
It's
and they
an
really
empty
seem
phone.
Dedicated to making it better.
And it's an empty phone.
Empty phone.
You do not get an empty phone in this day and age for that price.
Empty?
You mean like not having a ton of
It's devoid of extra bits and bobs that you have to get elsewhere, which has just become an annoyance, a hindrance on the Android experience.
Yeah.
I agree.
Just stop. Even like my Pixel, somehow all the Verizon stuff like found a way to get through under the radar. Like as soon as I signed it up with my Verizon SIM, it was like, and I bought it unlocked. Anyway, we'll get to that soon after the ad.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of today's episode. This is for all you people losing things out there. This episode is brought to you by Tracker, your phone, your wallet, your keys. If you're like me, you've lost them all at one point or another. You know they're plotting against you, hiding somewhere, trying to make you late for things because they go somewhere, they have a party, and you're not invited. Well, 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You just place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, your keys, your wallets, your remote, all of the above. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. And when you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached to it, you just use your smartphone. There's an app that you load up, and a 90-decibel alert will help you find that item in seconds. It even has powerful LED lights, so you can find your item when it's in the dark. And if you happen to lose your phone, kind of the reverse problem, just press the button on your Tracker Pixel that you have, and your phone will ring even if it was left on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. So go to thetracker.com/AAA to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com/AAA, and you'll get 20% off. And we thank Tracker for their support of All About Android. All right, we've got there's so much hardware in this hardware section. Ooh. It's heavy. I can't even lift it. Let's get into hardware. Not one, not two, not three, and actually technically not four. We've got five things to show off because there are two different types of pixels.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Holy moly. Go for it.
We're starting off with the Pixel 2, which is the phone that I've been using as a daily driver for the last couple of weeks.
Me too.
Here's the... Darn it. Why does...
It's okay.
Don't text me when I'm on air, people. Do you know my schedule by now?
This is the worst.
It's my mother, by the way. So I've been carrying the Pixel 2 for the last couple of weeks. Look at this cool little case I found on Amazon for like $7, by the way. Very, very nice. It's been an absolute delight. This is the first sub 5.5 inch device that I've been holding, that I've held in years. I've been so much with the pluses and the bigger phones and having the bigger screens.
Yeah. Now we're going in the opposite direction, you think?
Yeah. Now going in the opposite direction. I like it smaller. I've decided that with all the stuff that I'm carrying, smaller is better. So I'm happy for that. I'm also incredibly happy for the photo performance. And I've actually put together a little slideshow of pictures for my life for you, dear audience, the visual audience. I'm sorry to our podcast listeners.
I was thinking it was
just a quick little Victor, if you wouldn't mind starring the slideshow. Oh. So here is a night pick, and actually, Victor, the motion photo's on. If you don't mind turning it off in that little. Yeah, show you two motion photos at the end are really neat. So this is low light photography. You can go to the next one, just kind of inside of a bar setting. This is, I went to the Norse Theater last week to see Jeffrey Eugenides, I believe is how you say his last name. He's an author speak, and I was just really kind of wowed at how clear it came out in the pitch dark theater with the Pixel 2. We can go to the next one, Victor. Thank you. This is just in an alleyway. As you can see, the lights are a little like bursting there. Mm-hmm. They're, little exposy there, but otherwise there's lots of detail in the photo. Next one, Victor. Thank you.
That's pretty sweet.
Look at that. Sunday morning, San Francisco, which is like my favorite time.
Dang, that is a really great picture.
Victor, yeah, the next one is really nice too. There's the Transamerica. This I just took out of the lift. I was just snapping photos out. Victor, we can go to the next one. This is a zoom in photo. Victor, if you don't mind zooming into this one. You can kind of see like how pixelated it gets when you zoom in. So the zoom quality isn't like my fave. This is definitely one of those instances where, we've been talking about like the Note 8 and the OnePlus 5 and how they have that double lens on the back. Like there's a reason that double lens works is because you can do this sort of zoom in without it fraying. It's kind of a fray effect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That digital fraying.
Yep.
But I still took it. It still took a motion photo. The next one, this is a selfie. I just wanted to show you what a selfie looks like. This is, there's a beauty mode, by the way, built in, which kind of like smooths out your wrinkles.
Missed that.
Yeah.
I turn beauty mode
on. Yeah. And you can actually use it in portrait mode too. So if you feel really self-conscious about like wrinkles or scars, which we all do, and it's totally fine, but you're still beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
You can use the little like airbrush feature to sort of like
face retouching.
Yeah. And I like that it's not called a beautify feature. It's called a face retouching feature. Because you are beautiful no matter what anybody says. Nobody should tell you that you're not. Next one, please, Victor. Here's just a picture I took indoors of a person I work with at a space that I work with in a Jabba Hutt outfit because I just thought it would be fun to show off this photo. Oh, wait. But Victor, this is a motion photo. So turn this one on because I want to show you why I like this. So I love motion photo because... I took the still of the moment, but then I also have this animation that I can export as a video, 2-second video. And what I've been doing with the videos is actually uploading them to Instagram stories. And when you upload like a bunch of them in succession over the day, it strings together this nice little like soundless story. And that's kind of how I feel like sharing on social media like Instagram. Is I just want to share snippets of what I'm doing. I don't want to get so much into like, the sound and the volume and all that.
Right. I don't want to host these moments on Instagram. Yeah.
Good way to put it. That's exactly right.
And then this last one, Victor, if you don't mind, is just again the motion photo. It captures the little like candle flicker. Like it's just like a cool little animation of a moment and you don't have to think about it and the phone does it for you and it's all embedded in this 4 megabyte file
what's interesting about this is that we've been used to for the last couple of years in Google Photos seeing how it will like auto I don't know what the word is for it, but it'll take a video from the beginning or the end, or maybe it's, no, it's the sequence of images, and it will line them up. So it'll animate them, but it'll force everything to kind of stay still, which means skewing some things in the background. So when you watch this is all happening on the device, as far as I know.
I didn't use the still feature on this when I exported it, because when you use that feature, it crops the video and then it looks weird, like on social media. So I've been saving them full, just giving into the jarring effect. At the same time, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to say, you can see this is how the camera works when it's snapping the photo. That's how it stilled. Like, that's how it was holding still for whatever, the shot that I was taking while moving my hand.
Yeah. Yes, looks really good. It does this weird little warping thing when you look at it, which can be a little, depending on what you're capturing, can be a little strange. But it keeps it very still. Though. It's kind of the trade-off, right? Like, it keeps it still instead of it kind of bouncing around, which is what it would be doing without that.
I'm having fun with these, and I think I'm going to try and string together, like, a little video toward the end of the year. I'm going to see if I could put together, like a silly little stupid music video. One other thing is battery life on the Pixel 2. You guys, the milliamp hours has completely escaped my mind.
It's a 2700?
Thank you, JC. So battery life, I would say, is about on par with the Pixel XL when I first got it. Towards the end of life there, the XL, I never factory reset. Like, within a year, I let it run because I need that experience. So by the end of the time there, it sort of was...
It always deteriorates.
Well, because I had a lot of background stuff or apps I had installed that I didn't... Yep. Whatever. Yep. With this clean build, I still... Like, battery life is really good. This is, by the way, I wrote a little thing about my experience for Android Authority. When you're listening to music in the morning on your public transportation ride, you will... Oh, by the way... real quick here, Victor, if you don't mind clicking on that photo of my kitty, that first one. This is taken with the Note 8, by the way. You've already seen this if you follow me on Twitter. And then the next one, this is taken with the Pixel. So already you can see, like, the detail comes together.
Detail,
sorry, jumping. So back to battery life. You get about, like, 80% by the time I get to where I'm going. And that's about after a two-hour commute. So, and I have been using, I bought a couple of dongles for the headphones that I have. So I just have the dongle in my pocket and the phone stays in my bag. And that's how I've been listening to music. The audio quality with the DAC, which, spoiler alert, JC is going to walk us through a little bit soon, which I'm really curious to hear, because, like, the adapter that comes with the Pixel 2, the music sounds, we were talking about this last week, sounds phenomenal in my car. Like, I can finally blast music again, which I haven't been able to do just through Bluetooth.
I was actually a little upset that Ron wasn't here for me to spar with his Bluetooth everything, you know, kind of stance on stuff, but it's okay. We'll still be able to chat
about
it.
Well, and I'm just doing the Bluetooth thing with my headphones because, A, it's cheap. You can buy the adapter for, like, $8 on Amazon now from brands like Best Tech. And, B, it's an easy way for me to just kind of use, you know, I'm a person who needs stuff in different spaces. So I put, like, headphones by the door that always have the Bluetooth adapters in them. And then I have my Bluetooth, like, sports stuff always, you know, charging upstairs. So I just got to make sure I always have headphones on me. My last sort of closing statement of the Pixel 2 is that I really feel like this has just become the perfect marriage of the Android operating system and the way that the phones look, the Google phones. Because when you are using this UI, the way that, like, it's 6 o'clock right now here in California, and the way it, well, never mind, actually, I thought the notification shade was going to change, but the way that sort of the notification shade looks, the colors, the material colors, like the way that the UI works, the transitions between screens, it all, like, fits with this phone no matter the time of day. It's just this really nice, perfect synergy, and I really feel like Google's found its groove. The only thing it really needs to do now is put some marketing behind it, but to its credit, I can't tell you how many, like, how much smut TV I've watched, and every time there's been an ad break, there's been a Pixel commercial.
So they're doing a good job with that.
I have never seen Google commercials on like my smut TV channels, which just to be fully full disclosure, are channels like Bravo and E.
I really thought you calling them smut channels because it is explanation.
I am, you know, whatever. We all know what I consume, garbage television. But the fact that like that's the demographic that is being advertised to is very important because, ladies and gentlemen, 60% of the people who buy electronics in the household in this country are women, and those are the women watching those channels. And I am happy that they are knowing about this stuff because I want these commercials to be, I want it to be in Vogue. I want it to be oh, there was a Google Pixel ad in Martha Stewart magazine the other day. I've never seen that before. So anyway.
Yeah, Google is doing a much better job with that, where it's really my biggest complaint with a lot of manufacturers like HTC and LG. Yeah. It's not that I think they make bad products, it's who knows about them. Right. And that needs to be a top level situation. Like, we all talk about these products on YouTube and on streaming shows and on podcasts and stuff, but I can't do all of your advertising for you. You have to reach out to consumers too.
The people spending the money. Well, I mean, we're spending money too, but there are the other subset, you know, and I don't want to roll on this too long so we can get together, but I do want to say, which I tweeted about today, I'm having a very hard time convincing my mother to get a Pixel 2 because she's so enchanted by the promise of the Samsung device. And that's all that she has really, that's what she has grown to know and what she's grown to be used to. And like, that's a thing that I'm dealing with now is how do I sell the Google phone that everybody knows as like.
Yeah, but the Samsung's a good alternative for a lot of people. And
I know,
for a lot of people,
mom,
it's not an alternative. Samsung
but I want
is
my mom
thing.
To come into my ecosystem. Come into my ecosystem.
I mean, what's kind of hilarious is that we can actually say that in Android land, you know, it's not that you're in the Android ecosystem.
Yeah.
If you're in Pixel land, you're speaking right. a slightly different language or different dialect.
I want
of Android
everyone
than
in my
Samsung
life
land.
On Google Photos. I want them, I want all of us to have like, one family account, like one big family library. I want all of that interaction to happen. My dad has already said he's going to let me like equip the house with a bunch of Google stuff. So I'm going to take them off Amazon because I need them to be my guinea pigs for this full like.
You're going to remove the Amazon IV.
And with all the hardware that we're going to talk about for the rest of this block, this is what Google is trying to sell now is this whole family of devices that work you know, together. I've got third-party speakers now with Google Assistant that are working with this phone. I am locked in. I am locked in here. I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
Not leaving.
Yeah. All right. Wow. So that's Pixel 2 or the Pixel 2. JC, did you play around with this device real quick before?
Yeah,
move on?
I did the review for the smaller Pixel. Mm-hmm. It's Pixel 2 for Pocket now. I really liked it. I was concerned about the material, the coating on the back. Mine chipped really easily. And we did end up having to send mine back because mine had a mic problem. So we were going to keep it for my wife. She loved it. She really liked it until we got all of the videos back from Lex's first night of trick-or-treating and there was no audio. Oh. On any of those videos that we couldn't have known that in the moment. So that was kind of a major disappointment. And yeah. And again, that we just got unlucky with that. But it had already happened after I was done reviewing it. But to your point, Flo, it's like phones like the Pixel 2. And then I also spent a little time with the Sony Xperia XZ1 Compact, which is a terrible name for a phone. I'm really digging that quick burst, small screen kind of usage. They're not phones that I find myself diving in for like, I'm going to get lost in social media or I'm going to watch a ton of videos or I'm going to do a whole bunch of things from this larger pocketable screen. It's the, I pull it out of my pocket, one quick interaction, punch out a text message, reply to an email, something very, very time efficient. And then it's right back in my pocket again. So even though they don't have the biggest batteries, I find that they last me longer through the day just because I'm not sort of tied into this notion of getting distracted by other things on the phone. They seem to be a bit more singular purpose for me. And I'm really starting to appreciate that getting to done feel on phones like the smaller Pixel and the Sony and some of these other smaller phones.
That's an interesting point, but that's true. I would agree with that. Sometimes on the smaller phones, I end up using them differently. Just really, I'm not going to live my day through that phone.
Oh, I definitely do. Oh boy,
everybody uses their phones differently. We know that. Hey, and everybody uses their laptops differently, which is why a Chromebook or a Pixelbook, which is what I have here covering my face, might be good for some people and might not be good for other people. I think at this point you know whether a Chromebook is going to be okay for what you do. You know, what do you use it for? Do you use your laptop 99% of the time for web browsing?
Can I do
You'd probably be okay, you know, with the Pixelbook.
Oh, they're like, this is a really light laptop. Like
which one is that? That's
this is the Asus Chromebook 302.
Okay. Flip. Yeah, I mean it's super light. It's super thin. I brought this with me on a trip over the weekend, and I mean, you pack it in your backpack, and you hardly know that it's there. Feels nice. It's got really nice materials to it.
I wonder how much of your like human oils, how that's gonna wear over time.
Yeah, because people watching online, like this is, it's almost like a tacky rubberized kind of pad on both sides, which feels so nice, but
it's a different feel than like the back of the Pixel phones.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's this rubbery. This is like full on, like kind of has a rubbery,
it's like a
quality
silicone
to it.
Yeah,
yeah. I love the trackpad, although it comes, you can see it comes right to the edge right here, and I have a few times like where I'm trying to keep my hand still, I'm using the trackpad, and my thumb simply being trigger it.
That's not okay.
I mean, it didn't happen very many times, but it happened a couple of times. I was like, oh, well, that's kind of annoying.
We need bezels on the trackpad.
Yeah, there's one angry guy on YouTube who just screamed, deal breaker!
Yeah, there's always that person. there's a little assistant button that I can go ahead and hit that, and you can see my assistant popped up right there. I still have to hit the microphone in order to get it. I kind of wish that I could just go like this and fire off the microphone.
Well, maybe later they'll add an option, but that makes sense because you're not going to want to like talk to your computer when you're at a Starbucks. You're going to want to like type a question to Google.
Yeah, I know, but it's just not how I use the system. I'm so used to using my voice at this point. So every time I hit it, I'm like, so tell me, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I realize it's not.
Do you ever hit
that,
it like pretending it's the Apple key?
I do hit it every once in a while when I'm trying to hit shift or you know, control or alt or whatever. But, you know, you get used to that. All keyboards have little differences that you got to get used to. I don't know if it's possible to turn the light down in here for a second so I can show off one thing.
Ooh, yes, I want to see this.
So, okay, the backlit keys. This is a little bit of a complaint that I have, and I don't know how it's going to come across on video. Is it possible to turn down the lights in here? Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm throwing a new wrinkle into the whole deal. But Alex is here to save the day. So, okay. Great. So in order to change the backlight, you have to hold down Alt and do... This is normally screen brightness.
That's like
right?
that on the Chromebook Flip. Yeah.
So that's how they save space. So there's full on. And in a dark room, it looks pretty good. But you can kind of see there's some keys. And like I said, it's really... If you're using a laptop, you're rarely ever looking straight down on it, right? You're looking at it from an angle because it's laying on your lap. And when you start to put it at an angle, in certain environments, little dropouts happen with the keys where, it's showing way better on the camera, probably because of the iris and everything, than it does in person. But I see all these little keys that basically disappear. So there were certain times in certain environments where I was using this, and I was having a really hard time like reading the keys, even though I had the backlight on the keyboard. And that got a little annoying, you know, a few times. But again, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a deal breaker. I just kind of got used to it. And thank you for the lights. I appreciate it, Alex. What else about the Pixelbook? I've been using this thing solidly for the past few weeks here. Android apps, of course, can run on here. They work pretty well. Occasionally, you run into weird little touch performance issues depending on the app. I left the pen. I also have the pen, so I was using some Android apps with the pen to do some like drawing, you know, importing a photo and tracing over the top of it. And that's fun. I'm not an artist, so I don't know how much I'd actually use the pen with the Pixelbook, but it's nice to have that. I would just say that there isn't a whole lot of support for it right now. So I guess hopefully somewhere down the line, more developers are offering more apps that are tailored for the pen.
Do you think Google's going to approach this like Samsung does with S Pen? You know, like, because that kind of would create a slight fragment in Chromebooks, you know, having special purpose-built software just for that kind of touch interface on one product and not on another?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't rule it out necessarily. I just don't know if it's as an embedded of a hardware solution as it is with Samsung. With Samsung, like, it's in the device. You're going to have it all the time. Like, this is a prime example. I have the pen, but it's so big and there's no place to dock it that you really have to be... You have to purposefully bring it with you.
Well, the Tab S3 comes with an S Pen and you can't dock it.
Yeah.
And that is like the same class that Google's sort of going after with the Pixel, this Pixel Book. Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting the names of everything.
It's okay.
The Pixel Book, it's the same demographic as the iPad Pro. Like, that's the demographic they're going after, is the iPad Pro demographic. Mm-hmm. Is the power user who wants mobility, but who needs a little, who needs to be able to get in there and get precise. And so you could spend an extra $100 for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... And imagine this being used in the educational sector. I mean, imagine, you know, Academy of Art rolling these things out. I don't know.
I'm glad you brought up, you know, one like the iPad Pro, and then you also brought up education there. Because Jason, I'm really curious. You know, I'm really on board Chromebook picking up Android apps. I think that fulfills a huge chunk of the fear. You know, like when I can load Office apps, Microsoft Office apps, and know that I've got that kind of cross compatibility with different services, that's a huge boon for Chromebook. But we're looking at Google's offering here. How do you think that stacks up when we're talking about a similarly priced Windows laptop or an iPad Pro or another device? I don't want to make you say worth it, thumbs up, thumbs down, but is it worth it?
It's a different ecosystem. Sorry, not to answer for you, Jason, but
it's a different ecosystem, but it's all the same money, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, that's, I think, the big challenge, and I'm running an Android app, by the way, so you end up with a little bit of weirdness sometimes when you do that. That ends up being the big challenge, I think, for $1,000 to start, or what is it, like almost $1,100 to start for the Pixel Book, is who is the audience, and why are they going to spend that much money on this particular Chromebook?
When you can get a Dell XPS.
I think there are plenty of people that will do it. Like, I feel like what Google's thinking here is that there are a lot of people who are introduced to Chrome OS in the educational market, let's say, as one example, mm-hmm. and they go their entire time through school using that because that's what the school has. They need something to graduate to. Maybe they go on to university and they can graduate to an upgraded version of this OS that they're very used to at this point. So it seems expensive to a lot of people who are using, you know, a fully featured, let's say, for lack of a better word, laptop. But some people just don't need all that stuff, but they still want a very nice laptop.
Yeah,
this is an option for them.
I remember when I started college, which was, we'll go ahead and date me here, 2004 it was the year that budget laptops really came into the fold, and you were able to, like, you could actually buy something for $400 to go to school with. And
yeah.
I mean, a lot of times that's what people spent their student aid on, is they would spend it on that laptop that could last them for a couple of years. And for the most part, all you need in college, unless you're doing AutoCAD and blah, 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 but a lot of that stuff comes in later, in school. And so you have time to kind of like work up to that. When you just need to do documents and spreadsheets and internet research, and you need portabilities, and maybe you want a pen so you could like scrawl notes when you're in a study group. Like, I think that's cool. And it does Photoshop.
Well, yeah, at Photoshop Express, it's the Android version of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's neat to be able to do that. I was, you know, had a lot of fun with Photoshop, actually, manipulating some images with the pen and everything.
Well, if I was in college, I would have loved to have this laptop.
I think Apple was maybe just a little too early with the iPad Pro, but I think that they were right with how we're moving to modular web services and smaller apps. And there have been times where, like the time I flew to China to cover an Oppo launch, I did everything from a phone. I edited 4K video with layers, voiceover, transitions, and a soundtrack, and uploaded it, you know, rendered it and uploaded it from a phone. I didn't travel with a laptop. So when we're looking at something like this, we still have a ways to go before I think Google can make the same play in unseating the versatility of a Windows laptop, but we're not that far off. I think we're pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, there's very few things that I really need a full-featured laptop for, and I much prefer to just spend my time on something like this than I do my MacBook Pro, which I have at home. If I'm using my Mac Pro, it's because I'm using it for music production. You know, like, it has a very specific purpose to it. But for almost everything I do for work and in my personal life outside of music production, this is perfectly sufficient. And I love it. It's a really great portable laptop. Battery life's been excellent. It has a lot of really nice features like smart unlock. So when my phone is mm-hmm. next to me and it's unlocked, it will automatically pick up through Bluetooth here, and I can just tap on my profile image and it lets me in. So it makes it easier to get in. Performance still lags at certain times, even, you know, when I have enough windows open. This is the i5, not the i7 model. Maybe that gets better if you do the upgrade, but I didn't. But I mean, ultimately,
I have an i5.
It's been great.
Processor, I would say it's laggy.
Yeah, I mean, there were times here and there, but yeah. It was not a deal breaker. I really like this Pixel Book, so I guess that's my review.
JC, I want to hear about.
Oh yeah. What's no, up? I was gonna wrap it up because I felt like there was this weird hole with the first. This is the Pixel Book, the Chromebook Pixel. And that we went so long before they followed it up that I'm glad to see that Google, I would like to see more regular hardware updates than what we, and I hope we see a follow up to this more readily, kind of like what Microsoft did with the Surface. But this gives me a lot more faith in Chromebook at all tiers, not just like, you know, I can walk in and get a really cheap Acer, but if someone wants something nicer, then there is a solution for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So JC, it's your turn now.
Yeah. Trying to transition us. I'm sorry for that interruption.
This is a long hardware section. You got the Huawei Mate 10 Pro. What's up with it?
Well, it's a little harder to show off with my moody lighting. So like I'm trying to catch like the reflection off. Mate 10 Pro. So I last year the Mate 9 was one of my surprise phones of the year. And the Mate 10 is proving to be just a little bit more controversial. The difference between the 16:9 screen regular Mate 10 and the 2:1 aspect ratio Mate 10 Pro. I still feel Huawei has a little bit of an uphill challenge in describing the differences between the two phones, what phone is going to what region. You know, we run into these issues when we're talking about, you know, shipping all over the world, and some places are going to be getting a Mate 10 Pro, some places are going to be getting the regular Mate 10. But focusing on this actual phone here in front of me, I think this, and I'm going to say in my personal opinion, but I'm totally right and objective in saying this, I think this might be the most attractive aesthetic design of the year. So many phones have gotten just one or two little elements off in a way that irks me. And I haven't found anything like that on this phone. The symmetrical look of the back with the sensor bridged by the flash, the dual camera lenses vertically lined up with the centered positioned fingerprint scanner. And then calling back to design elements that I've loved, this band running across the back of the phone, which recalls the Nexus 6P and the Huawei Nova and the last year's Mate 9. All of these things blend together really, really well. I think this phone is gorgeous. I think this is probably my favorite look for a glass back phone this year. Performance has been pretty good. I think this has actually been something of a lateral move for Huawei. The Kirin 970 doesn't seem to be that much more powerful than the 960 was last year, but the die shrink has made this a phenomenal battery life performer. Mega huge battery capacity is 4,000 milliamp hour battery, and then this uses power more efficiently because of the die shrink and a lot of their sort of on-device machine learning code so that it's not having to hit, you know, your data connection quite as often. A lot of these things work hand in hand, better garbage protection, better garbage collection, cleaning up the phone. This has been a really nice all around experience. And it's nice to see Huawei's take on the 2:1 display. This is the OLED screen version. I had to turn off the ultra saturation mode. I always like kind of tuning down colors on screens whenever I can, just something that's a little bit more accurate. And then that brings me to the cameras. Dual Leica designed cameras, so you've got excellent photo performance. I think this is probably one of those phones that's going to be polarizing. If you like the look of Leica's image processing, this is a phenomenal shooter with excellent manual controls. If you like the more auto awesome HDR plus look, you're going to definitely want to go for something like a Pixel instead.
Didn't this score better at DxO?
Well, I see, that's the thing about DxO. I'm not going to call them out and say that their reviews and scores are suspect, but I think they're internally consistent. You just have to read through the actual review to see what they're scoring where. Mm. So
almost like the end result, the end score doesn't mean nearly as much as the individual bits.
I have a hard time with the way that they're like, oh, this is the highest scoring phone ever. And then you'll go and you'll see like, oh, we saw massive lens defects. And you're like, well, that's kind of an important aspect of a camera is how good the lens quality is. I would say once you start seeing any phone scoring in like the high 90s on DxO, it's good. It's going to be fine. And you really as a consumer. Yeah. Well, but you as a consumer, you're going to have to say, like, what do I care about more? Do I want a phone that I can pull out of my pocket and push a shutter button and not mess with anything else? I might not even tap the screen to focus. Go get a Pixel. I mean, seriously, that is the phone for you. If you're a shooter like me and you want to dig into some more of those granular controls, then you're looking at LG and Huawei. I think they're the top two players for that kind of photography and videography. That's exactly the point. I'm glad you brought up night photography because the dual sensor setup here works really well for that portrait mode effect.
Yeah.
So while the Pixel image processing is amazing from a single sensor phone, this isn't doing any weird crop. It's the full field of view from the normal main camera sensor. And this is probably the best performer I found for that kind of artificial blur effect when we start getting into dimmer conditions and lower light.
Oh, wow.
So you can't really do that from an iPhone or a Samsung because they use that tiny little zoom sensor for the portrait mode. If you like that effect, I still think Huawei has the lead on the best representation of that kind of software. Okay.
Wow. And so this is around $920 when you convert to US dollars. However, it's not available in the US. This is UK only at this point, right?
At the moment, and we're still waiting to see what that release might look like. I would be very surprised if it were just the straight exchange rate. Because that's not what happened with the Mate 9.
Right.
And so I would expect an early 2018 launch, just like we saw with the Mate 9. And there are rumors that this could be the phone that breaks through a carrier deal, that this phone might end up on AT&T.
Hmm.
Always been wanting that. Yeah.
We shall see.
We shall. Very nice. And interesting. I hope that I can see one in person, maybe play around with one.
It's
myself.
A pretty phone. And I know the headphone jack is definitely a bummer, but we'll talk more about that in just a bit. But if you want a big, powerful phone with a big, big battery that charges stupid fast, I would definitely put this one on the list.
Right on. The Huawei Mate 10 Pro. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Flo, you got the last in this mega-sized hardware block.
Make this quick, ladies and gentlemen.
This should have been a hardware shack.
What I have here is a beat-up Moto Z.
Nice. Still ticking.
Yeah, still ticking. It is the Force. It was supposed to be kind of beat it up. And this is the mod that goes on the back.
It makes it look like a speaker or something.
It makes it look like a speaker. So let's do this over here. So I've got here the Moto Mod. It's got a speaker.
Oh, it is a speaker.
I
knew that.
So it says get app, which I already have. So I'm going to open an app. Sorry, Victor. I'm just all over the place here. Let's see how this works.
There we go. I put the product page in the doc if you want to show
it. It's loading right now. I don't know why it's having problems. But I will vamp until then. So the Moto Smart Speaker, it runs Amazon. Yeah, it's got 15-hour battery, which is insane in the membrane. And it'll cost $150, which is cheaper than some of the other mods out there, actually, when you think about it. Let's see. I'm trying
And we got to play with this one when Motorola dropped by Newegg. And the design on this I thought was kind of interesting that, I mean, you can take it with you places, but it seems to be more of a sedentary. Like, you're going to want to leave this in a place where you're going to kind of use your phone hands-free a lot. Like, I could see this in a kitchen, for example.
I'm not sure how I'm supposed to, like, put it.
Because like, it's different than the JBL. The JBL had that little kickstand, and they want you to take it outside.
Huh. Okay, don't do that. The screen. Oh, but the screen can't shatter, so because the force. So you're okay with this one.
Hey, Skelly. Skelly. Are you on?
I love all of the people's, like, the scallops that are going off now.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. I just realized that's what I was doing. I'm so sorry, everyone out there. It's not working. I don't understand why it's not
Moto
working.
Mods. It just works.
It's very possible that I have to set it up like a regular...
We got one to play with, but they were very hands-on in how we were interacting with it. So I'm wondering if there are still a few, like, I don't know, like driver gremlins or something that they're having to sort out.
So it was shown off to you. Did you get a chance to hear like music through it? How did it sound?
It sounded better than the JBL. Okay. It is a punchy, aggressive, loud little speaker. I'd put it up there with like one of those smaller portable Urban Ears. Those little Bluetooth speakers. It's a solid performer. I wonder about Motorola piggybacking on this bandwagon when there are so many sort of Android in-house opportunities with Google Assistant. Mm-hmm. And especially like we're watching, well, like Google Home as a solution in the Android and Google ecosystem. Now we've got Amazon trying to work in that space also. And I am still not completely sold on the phone being the portal to an Amazon Scala. I'm not entirely sure what that brings to Amazon, what that brings to Scala users. And I feel it's kind of distracting on Android, where it can do some things, but it kind of can't do other things. And you want to use Assistant for this stuff, but you want to use Scala for these other things. I'm having that difficulty, my own personal mental block on how would I interact with these things? And it feels cluttered to me to have two ecosystems like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of clutter.
It's just not working,
you
huh?
You have to download the actual Moto Scala app to use it. You can't just have the Amazon Scala app, which is insane.
Well, that's just it. That's like HTC and Huawei. When they included a Scala, it became this like, there is an Scala app. You don't want to use that. That's just for controlling or monitoring your Scala. You need to get this HTC Scala app. And then you still need to squeezy the sides of the phone if you want to enter. And so like, this is already too much.
Need a SIM card. So I can't even use it because this is just a phone with no SIM card because it's a review unit I have left over.
So this makes a lot of sense in why they were like, you need to use this phone when you do the demo
like
on the Alexa.
I understand.
Had
right, why he had it. Yeah, totally.
I mean, I understand. I understand why you would want it to be connected to cellular because you want to use Scala anywhere the heck you are, which I get it, but that's not cool because I just have like an old phone and maybe I want to keep it as like a little speaker, I don't know, maybe whatever, it'll keep it around longer. Like, can't I just use it through Wi-Fi? It's the same thing as a smart speaker.
But this makes me a little concerned for Motorola because I think one of the successes of Moto Mods is that users haven't to date needed to jump through any hoops to install stuff.
Yeah.
You slap a projector on your phone and to quote another company, it just works.
Yeah.
And I think that making me install apps to use something like a smart speaker where even just the basic functionality of the speaker should at least fire up, it might be a bridge too far when I think there's already a tough selling point on the notion of a modular phone.
Well, there you go. There's your paperweight.
I really want to apologize to everyone for how many times I said the A word. I'm really sorry.
The A word.
I'm sorry.
The A word.
Sorry for what I did to you today.
The other A word.
You can forgive me.
The other A word. All right. Let's see here. Maybe, you know, if you have an experience with this particular Moto mod and you actually got it to play something, let us know. AAA@twit.tv.
Send me a video. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, prove it to us. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of today's episode. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. If you need sound effects for, you know, maybe you're doing a podcast, you know, podcast production, you need some sound effects for that, or video background for your website, or a hero image for your blog. If you're a creative and you need you need these elements, but you're sometimes compromised because of budget constraints, you can get studio quality stock footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost with Video Blocks. We've used it in house. Victor, speaking of Hardware Shack, put together a Hardware Shack bumper using video from Video Blocks, which was pretty awesome. A couple of weeks ago, we had a perfect opportunity to play it today, and we did not. That is my fault. Anyways, it was very awesome. You can download all the stock media your heart desires from their member library. That includes over 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, and 400,000 images. They have After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and a whole lot more. All content is royalty free, so you can use it for commercial and personal projects. Everything you download is then yours to keep and use forever. New content is added regularly, so there's always something fresh to download. Also, you get exclusive discounts on over 5 million additional marketplace clips that are available to purchase directly from artists. You don't risk the quality of a project due to the high cost of acquiring footage with Video Blocks. You don't have to use old or outdated footage. No more footage with an ugly watermark. You've seen that a lot. Video Blocks footage has been used by over 90,000 customers, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, and the Travel Channel. If this speaks to you because you're a creator and you want to get to using this, go to videoblocks.com/android. You'll get all the stock footage, audio, and images you can imagine for $149 a year. That's videoblocks.com/android. You'll save on millions of studio quality stock media from Video Blocks. And we thank Video Blocks by Storyblocks for their support of All About Android. All right, so we don't have an app section necessarily right now. JC, you promised at the beginning of this episode, and I saw you also promised it on Twitter, that you were going to come out and you were going to set the record straight on the differences between 3.5 millimeter and USB-C for audio in our phones. Straighten away.
So the issue is there really isn't a difference.
Oh.
All right. And we've got an email.
And we're done. The show's running way too long. I'm going to tighten this up. No. So one of the things we start talking about these like headphone adapters and these dongles, like there's some kind of digital audio that's different than what we've been doing since the CD player. They're not. It's just all we've done is we've moved the hardware out of the phone and put it into a cable. In the case of the Pixel 2. So, I mean, Jason, you're a music guy, and I've heard you asking questions like, well, I mean, the digital audio of this sounds better than like the analog of the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. And you're like, well, they're actually kind of the same thing. We all go through the same process. You've got a digital file, which is zeros and ones. And so then we have to convert that into an electrical signal. We convert it from a digital file into some kind of analog representation of that, a digital to analog conversion or a DAC. And then that electrical signal is made bigger or amplified so that it can properly drive speakers or headphones. So the DAC and the amp are basically the same no matter where they live. So when Ron's going out there and saying like, oh, Bluetooth audio, all we've done is we've moved the DAC and the amp to the headphones. And so a wireless data stream is sent from the phone to the headphones, and then the headphones are responsible for converting it into audio that our ears can actually interact with.
Question.
And so this...
Sorry.
Yes.
Oh my God, I totally interrupted you.
I insist.
The day of interrupting, JC. So does that mean that if my it's really low in my car when I have an aux cable in there, does that mean that my car isn't, like, it's not doing any converting when I put the Bluetooth adapter there? Like, it's just that's so, the speakers?
So, Flo, and I'm glad you brought this up, because the reason why I kind of sparked on this is I think it was two episodes ago. I think it was your Halloween episode. You were talking about how much better your tunes were from this headphone dongle than I think from your Bluetooth or anything like that. And so one of the happy discoveries was the DAC and the amp that are built into the Pixel 2 headphone dongle are of a higher quality than the DAC and the amp that were built into the original Pixel. This is a huge disappointment for the first generation Pixel, a phone made by HTC, known for audio, is it was actually one of the poorest headphone performers.
It was so bad. It was so low.
It was terrible. And so now this dongle is far more competitive this year against the Galaxy. It's in the same ballpark as the dongle for the iPhone and the built-in headphone jack for the Galaxy S8 and the Galaxy Note 8. But again, there's not anything magical about that digital relationship. All we've done is we've yanked that hardware out of the phone and we've put it in a cable. And same thing, anytime we've got that kind of cabled connection, all we've done is we've moved the pieces around. They're not really any different than what we've been using since the CD player. That is a representation of digital audio, zeros and ones, converted into an analog electrical signal, amplified for your headphones, you can hear music. And that's the exact same chain that we've existed with this entire time in converting audio into zeros and ones.
Yeah, and that all makes sense to me. There are different levels of quality digital to audio conversion. I'm curious to know kind of how that conversion on phones traditionally compares to that of these dongles.
Well, and that all comes down to what the manufacturer has decided to spend money on.
Yeah,
So far to date, the company that I think has been doing the best job of delivering a truly audiophile great experience is LG. LG is using a Saber DAC. They're not using the built-in Qualcomm chipset audio. Mm-hmm. Now, that got a lot better this year. With the Snapdragon 835, Qualcomm now has true support for 32-bit output. It can deliver frequencies of sound that dogs cannot hear. I mean, the full representation of the highest possible quality audio files will be represented on Snapdragon 835s. It was not always enabled on Snapdragon 820s. So 820s often would downgrade your audio to more CD quality. So even if you were playing a 24-bit file, just because the file could play, the phone was plenty powerful enough to play that file, doesn't mean you were really getting the full frequency response and the full bit rate and the full volume of what that file could represent. But the big win on this isn't necessarily always just the conversion, that it's a high-quality conversion. It's how is that file being amplified? And I think that's what really gets people into a higher quality audio is you get a louder representation. It's properly driving your headphones. It's properly driving your car stereo. That's a louder signal. And from there, you also have a better signal to noise ratio in most cases. So a phone like the V30 wins on two fronts. It's a very high quality representation of that audio file, but it's also properly driving even nicer pieces of gear. Like really expensive headphones, you're really going to hear that difference in the amp. And that's also why, you know, the people were saying, oh, it's amazing that the Pixel has 25 volume steps. You know, like, oh, I can get finer granular control over my headphones. The V30 has 75.
Oh.
It can get so loud, you really can hurt yourself if you're not paying attention or you're trying to make like a quick adjustment or something. Yeah. The phone kind of won't let you because the amp on that thing is so killer. Hmm. I think a similar phone is also the Axon 7. Also has a crazy loud headphone amp. Does a really good job of driving nicer headphones.
Well, the Axon 7, is all about, I mean, one of its key features audio. Was about that high definition, high quality audio. So first of all, thank you for the correction, because I know this, and if I ever said that audio coming out of USB-C sounds different than audio coming out of 3.5 millimeter, like that obviously doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless there is
a varied quality of DAC that, you know, when comparing two different models. My question comes to Bluetooth, because you mentioned no audio degradation on Bluetooth, and I know that I've heard audio degradation on Bluetooth, but what's going on there? Is it that the Bluetooth send and the Bluetooth receive don't support the same file format quality, and therefore there's some sort of compression happening? What's going on?
Oh, definitely. And Bluetooth audio, especially when we're talking about higher quality Bluetooth codecs, we're still talking about very heavily compressed streams of data. I mean, you look up the spec on even Bluetooth 5, and, well, I guess Bluetooth 5 would open it up more for 24-bit audio, but most people are still on Bluetooth 4.2 for their phone and the headphones that they're using. I mean, both pieces need to support that ability to talk at Bluetooth 5 levels. But when you're dealing with that, when you're dealing with Bluetooth 4.2, even if you have something like aptX, it's just a smarter kind of compression. It's kind of like going from H.264 to H.265. You can squeeze more information into a smaller space, but you're still squeezing. You're still squishing. But a major issue with that is also just the fact that wireless interfaces are prone to having inconsistent signals. You don't have that with a cable. You know, there's a reason why pro gamers still connect directly over Ethernet to some kind of router for their throughput. It's because, you know, on average, they're getting a fast speed, but there will be peaks and valleys. And in the cable, you're going to minimize that significantly more. And this is also why, you know, I feel we're just maybe a year too early for getting rid of headphone jacks. I want to see good consumer solutions for USB-C while we're doing this hardware transition.
But
I think
then
it's
they
pretty
can't
clear.
Sell you Bluetooth headphones, JC. How are they going to sell you Pixel Buds?
See, but we need both. We need both cabled and wireless. Wireless is way more convenient. I want wireless when I'm lifting weights and working out. But there are so many more times where I'm listening to podcasts or I'm, you know, listening to music. And I've been listening to a lot of music on my V30. And even just the simple act of crouching with the phone in my pocket is enough interference from my marginal frame to cause a stutter or to cause the audio to drop out. And that drives me crazy.
Yeah. And things like that are what make me very resistant to Bluetooth.
So my perfect future is, we know that the 3.5 millimeter jack is going away, but it would be really nice if a company like Sennheiser or Audio Technica or Sony was responsible for the DAC and amp connected to a headphone cable. So you can invest in a really nice pair of Sennheiser headphones, and it's got a USB-C port on it, and then it doesn't matter what phone you connect it to. You'll always have your 24-bit or 32-bit DAC with the amp tuned to drive those headphones, and you can take them to a $100 phone. You can take them to a $1,000 phone. That won't matter. But we're not there yet, so we're left with these imperfect cable dongle annoying solutions, and we're sort of stuck, and it's going to drive a lot of people to Bluetooth, but for a lot of use cases, Bluetooth is inferior. I want something better or more consistent or higher quality than that.
Agreed. Amen. Thank you. Thank you for clearing the record on that.
One last thing, and Flo, to your point about the headphone dongle from the Pixel, this is not true for the HTC dongle. It's not true for the Motorola dongle. Those are proprietary to those phones.
Yeah.
But you can take the Pixel dongle and pop them on, you know, a really cheap burner phone, and you'll get higher quality audio. You can connect them to last year's Galaxies, which the Galaxy S7, not a very strong headphone performer. The Pixel dongle, well, I guess that you'd need an adapter for, because they were still using USB 2, micro USB, not USB-C.
Yes.
But anything with USB-C, an LG G5, since we didn't get the high quality DAC here in the United States, you can take the Pixel headphone adapter and it's going to sound better than the headphone jack that's built into the G5.
Oh, wow.
Why don't they rate these dongles then? Because there are, I'm sure, dongles out there that aren't as good as the
Please
Pixel dongle.
Please rate these dongles.
Why do you have me? Yeah. I do that.
Okay, cool. The JC approved. It's got the stamp of approval. Right on. That's
thank
awesome.
You, JC.
Yeah, thank
that
you.
That was very informative.
Yes. And everybody that is here because you tweeted that you were going to talk about this, I hope they got what they needed.
I hope so too.
Get.
It was, we had to clear the air. It had to happen.
Thank you. Real quick, before we get into the arena, we have an email from Brian Cantrell who said, I got a brand new electric shaver. Yes, stay with me. A Bronze Series 778-65cc, if you wanted to know, and used it for the first time this morning. I had my Pixel 2 XL next to me, and when I finished, I noticed a notification that it detected a song, even though I had not played anything. I checked Now Playing History, the app that I brought last week in the arena, and sure enough, the Pixel 2 XL detected not one, but two songs in the dulcet tones of my electric shaver. I haven't heard of either of these, but I listened, and I can see some similarity. I'm not sure if these artists would be happy having their songs compared to an electric shaver, though. Icon for Hire, Off With Their Head, I'm assuming.
Probably.
And Keys and Crates, I Just Can't Do Something, because I can't see it because it runs off the screen, by Solo and Scripted. So there you go. Songs that that sound like shavers. Shaver songs.
What does that say about...
I don't know. That's an interesting... mistake.
So there really are subliminal messages hidden in our music.
Yes.
And or subliminal messages hidden in our shavers.
What is the language that we've been missing for so long with our electric shavers? We didn't know they were talking to us. Now we know. Thank you very much, Brian, for sending that in.
Now the shavers are after us, too.
Yes, let's take the tinfoil hats off, because it's time.
I, for one, welcome our new robot overlord.
The shaver. Our prescient shavers. It's time for the arena, Victor.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, last week's poll and the results are in.
Okay.
We'll take a look, and Bat On wins at 38%. Very
good.
Go me. Go you.
Thank you, everyone, for voting.
Right on. That was Flo's app, 38%.
Hey, look at you, though. Number two.
Wanted number one, but that's okay. I'll take number two. It's better than number four. Now Playing History gets number two at 25%. 8-Bit Photo Lab was Ron's app. It came in at 19%, third place. And then Showcast was the fourth app.
Look at the leaderboard.
Leaderboard.
What's going on this week?
Let's see here. Week 46. Flo in the lead, 125. Ron XO at 120. Guess at 110. And me at 108.
Thank you, Wade County.
I'm very far behind. Thank you, Wade County.
You can catch up, though, this week. You can catch up, because...
We'll see. I kind of went with a safe pick this week.
I know, but I... You know what? You deserve this.
You deserve the safe pick. Whatever it's going to take
to drag you
back up. Let's see here. All right. So I was a big
fan.
You're
going first.
I'm going to get it out of the way. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because you probably all played it by now. But the sequel to Monument Valley is out now. If you didn't know, it's $4.99. I was a big fan of the original. I don't complete many games on mobile. Because I get distracted and I move on, but I definitely completed Monument Valley 1, and went out of town for the weekend, and so on the plane there and back, I was kind of playing through the levels of Monument Valley 2. I'm going to go ahead and start over on this one to kind of show it off. Now, it's similar to Monument Valley 1. Obviously, they'd be kind of crazy to go too far off the beaten path of what they showed in the first one. Oh, that's right. There we go. What's a little bit different here is that there are two of you now. There's the mother and the daughter, and it kind of becomes a little bit more complicated because they get separated, and I think you'll see that here soon. Let's see here. What do I do here? I'm trying to remember what I do. I did this on the plane. That was so long ago. Wait a minute. Why am I suddenly now stupid?
You're not.
I can't remember what I'm supposed to do. Oh, wait. Never mind. Those are steps. So anyways, travel through this deep dive of stupidity with me. Okay, so here you go. We'll go up here, and you'll kind of see the landscape. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it kind of separates you. So we'll go ahead and go over here and take that up. And you get split. Now, that was really easy, right? But in other levels, they get split, and you have to figure out in which order you move the mom so that the daughter can also move in an opposite direction. It's kind of like they're working together, but they're obviously operating on different aspects of the game. So it takes a little bit of time to kind of try and work with it and figure it out. This is, of course, what Monument Valley is really good at, is playing around with forced perspective. And so go like that. Then I'll shift this around. And there we go. And I can talk to whoever that is. You guys have probably played Monument Valley before. I don't need to show you a whole lot about Monument Valley 2, but I will say that it's a lot of fun. The same gaming elements, everything that you loved about the first one, you're going to love about the second one. And it adds that nice twist of having the two different players, two different characters in it that make it a whole lot more difficult depending on the level that you're at.
What a nice animation.
And yeah, I mean, the thing I love about it is like the puzzles are difficult, but you know, they say hypnotizing in this promotional video, and it really does kind of lull you in. It is a very hypnotizing game. The music, the kind of, I don't know, the whole experience is very soothing. So it's a lot of fun, and you should check it out. It's called Monument Valley 2. If you're looking for a good game to kill some time, this is it.
Well, and also just love that it's a pay up front game.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I know. More of these, please. Just
totally agree. You pay the $4.99 up front, and that's it. You move on, and you just get to play it, and you don't get bothered the whole time. So, pretty great stuff. All right. I will go ahead and show off your app. I have it installed. Oh, I don't know if I needed to set it up, though. I just installed it, so I might.
So, you might not be able to show off a whole lot, yeah. And you probably shouldn't, because I was also thinking I could send you some screenshots, but my app has to do with, like, banking information. Yeah. So, don't want to.
My app is
Acorns, and there are a couple different services that do this, and then also a lot of banks and credit unions are starting to try and play in this space, too. It really bothers me that a lot of reviews have been calling this, like, oh, it's the investing app for millennials. No, I think anyone who's looking at trying to dip their toe into some kind of money management or some kind of low risk investing will probably like this. And the big hook for Acorns is this is a spare change investing app. And so you can throw money at it. You can put in a big deposit. You can set up monthly deposits if you want. They recommend, you can give us $5 a month and we'll put this into different markets and we'll invest it for you. But I'm really terrible at managing this kind of stuff. And so I've been giving this a spin for about 4 months now and just doing what they call roundups. So whenever I go out and I buy something with my debit card, it automatically rounds up to the nearest dollar, collects all of those little micro charges into one big batch, and then it sends off, I think, a $5 chunk whenever I reach that $5 tier. And you can kind of set this up for different, like if you want to invest really aggressively, if you're looking at something really low risk, and you can set your own goals for how high you want to go. I think if you're the type of person who has a couple thousand dollars looking to invest, you'll probably want to go to a more traditional money market kind of solution, or again, something through a bank or a credit union. I'm a big fan of credit unions. Support your local credit union. But this is, again, for people like me who I'm not quite as savvy at handling that kind of cash or trying to handle those types of money solutions. So far, in the 4 months that I've been using it, my dividends and my returns on the paltry sum of money that I've contributed just through these roundups is already doing better than if I were just socking money away in a savings account. So it's a great little service. It's really easy to get into. And then you can also, they've got partnerships with a bunch of different retailers. I think Blue Apron is one of them. So if you buy through Blue Apron and tie it to your Acorns account, you also get like a little money boost. They'll put $5 into your account or something like that. I can't remember. I haven't actually linked up at the time that I've been using them. But I think they use Groupon, New Balance, Airbnb, all have partnerships with the service too. So it can be a handy way to kind of get you into investing, get you into saving money, or you know, you want to set a goal. I'm going to be doing a full workstation computer rebuild, and I'm kind of using this to sock some cash away so that I can save for it without it just being in my savings account or in my checking account where I know I'm going to, I feel like buying something frivolous today. I'm just going to dip into that fund. This is a little safer for me in keeping that money separate from the rest of my banking and credit cards.
Nice. And by the way, Blue Apron is a sponsor on the Twit Network, just to make sure you know that. But Acorns, that's great. It's awesome to be able to kind of shave that off slowly over time, and that can really add up depending on how you set it up. It sounds like this gives you the ability to kind of set it up however you like, so it can be more extreme than just rounding up to the nearest dollar or whatever.
Oh, definitely. And you can put as much money as you want. This is the one that I think I've found, because I've played with a couple of these now. This is the one that I like the best for that low risk start, where you don't need to get, I think you start off with $5. Yeah. And then from there, it'll track your roundups and it'll build for you. If you're the kind of person, like I said, if you've got more money to kick this off, I would definitely recommend going with another type of service, like a more mainstream kind of investing solution. But this has been so much easier and so much less intimidating to get into, that if you're a person like me who are in that kind of a boat where you kind of need training wheels to get into this. Mm-hmm. You're not just instantly going to jump in front of, you know, triple monitors to go do your day trading every day. Then I would highly recommend checking this one out.
Nice. Awesome. That is Acorns Invest Spare Change. And that is, well, is it free? Is it a free service, or is there a monthly fee for that?
There are fees associated with it, but I think the fees for this level of investing are lower than if you were, again, starting off with a small sum, yeah, but going through a bank or a credit union.
Right, right.
The fees would hit you a lot harder there. It's when you start climbing up into $1,000 plus that you're going to have to do the math on what makes more sense for you. But that's also why I don't really feel that this service is geared towards that person who has a lump sum investment to start. They're really looking at this as that micro transaction. It runs in the background. You can be pretty hands off. You can be as hands on as you want to be. You can dig into the minutiae of what markets and what your investments are doing, or you can just go, oh, well, I had a cup of coffee today, round up that 27 cents and, you know, put it on my deposit later this month.
Right. Yeah. It says here $1 per month for accounts investing less than $5,000 after it grows past $5,000 switches to 0.25% per year.
Which then at that 0.25%, you know, you do want to look at what can you get through your normal banking institution. Right, right. I think at that point, you've got pros and cons that you need to decide. But I haven't found anything that, again, for the low level, small sum, I haven't found anything that hits you less hard on fees for that kind of money management.
Yeah. Awesome. Great pick. It's called Acorns. Sorry. All right, Flo, you are up next. What you got?
So I've been trying to build up my arsenal of apps to bring into the arena, and one particular category of apps that came about were apps that help people with who need help accessing other parts of life. So one particular app, which is the one I brought today, is called Be My Eyes. It's a free app that essentially lets you be eyes for someone who is either blind or visually impaired.
Oh, wow.
So if they're having trouble reading the label on something, or like telling between colors, all they have to do is essentially, it's the equivalent of basically FaceTiming an anonymous person, and then you respond, and then that's it. They go back on with their day, and you go back on with your day. So it's, you know, it's an exchange network. You can use it. Either. Oh my goodness, this brightness is so high all of a sudden.
There we go.
It's okay. We can try again, Victor. There we go. So it's really, goodness, let me do that one more time. Sorry.
It's like you're all the way at the bottom of the brightness
thing. I know,
and
I just don't understand. That's okay. Crazy. So as you can see, there are a lot of volunteers, a lot of people who are using this, it says, or at least that's what it says on the counter. You can sign up with by making an account, or you can sign up with your Facebook account. There are very few settings. You can choose if you can help in other languages. Maybe you speak fluent Spanish. Maybe you're like me, you speak fluent Romanian and you want to help people out who might need it. There's a quick little video that you can watch to learn how to answer a call. So what it's going to do is we're going to do a quick little demo. So I'm going to lock up the phone. And it's supposed to start vibrating. Okay, it's not vibrating because I put it on Do Not Disturb. Good call. Good call. So I'm going to unlock it now. Hey, there's a test notification, so I can answer the call. And now it's just like the test video to show you like it's how you're supposed to help. So, I mean, that's nobody's called me yet for help. But I am standing by if you need me, and it's not intrusive at all. It literally just lives on your phone, and if somebody calls, you'll get a vibration or a ringer just as you would somebody calling you, and if you can't answer it, it's fine. You can just ignore the call like you would ignore anybody else in your life calling you on the phone, and it'll find somebody else to pair them up with.
And you just talk with whoever's calling, and they might have a question for you.
You answer through voice.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's not so, video. I guess when I saw the video playing, yeah. I was like, oh, suddenly video call.
Yeah,
I,
it'll, like, you answer through voice,
okay.
Which can seem strange. But, you know, if you're interested in doing this, I would say it's not that strange. And, you know, in life, we all have to rely on a little help from our friends.
Yeah, yep.
So, and you know what? I thought what a nice, like, app to bring into the arena just to show, like, some of the nice stuff that exists in the Play Store. Because, sure. Like, this is just really nice. And in the midst of all the bad stuff, sometimes it's just nice to know that there are still people out there who just want to help each other.
Yep. Be My Eyes. It actually reminds me, God, it was a few years ago at this point, there was an app. I think I brought it into the arena, and it was an alarm clock app where someone would call you as a wake-up call.
Oh, that's a bit intrusive for me because I am like, I don't know you.
I don't want to talk to a stranger when I'm just waking up.
Yeah, not first thing
in the morning. Time to wake up, you.
But this is like the cool technology.
Yeah.
Offshoot, like another life ago when I was doing a lot more work in recording and VO, you would always have sort of these volunteer programs to be like magazine and news readers, right? So you could have like newspapers or magazines narrated for you. And this seems like now we can use cameras and much better connected technologies to provide similar kinds of outreach for people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you need help or... you want to help?
Offer.
Just install it.
That's
fine.
Be
My
Eyes.
You just do it when you're feeling up to it. You don't even have to do it when you're not feeling up to it.
Excellent pick. All right. So it's time. It's that time in Sprockets where we dance. No, it's time for you to vote. twit.to/AAAPoll343 is your favorite app. Monument Valley 2. Is it Be My Eyes? Is it Acorns?
Go Banana.
Yes. Yes. Although,
so I'm like super, super nervous on this in that like I have two wins from previous appearances and I don't think I'm going to be able to beat Monument Valley.
Oh, you'll be fine.
I was really trying to rep for the guest.
But I really like your app. I might start using it. I mean, just think about it. You're saving $2,000 at the end of the year. Like, that's good pocket change.
I know, right?
I can buy some stuff.
Not too shabby at all for just shaving little pieces of your
That's
your
the beginning
money off
of a roof fund for some of us.
Roof fund. You know how to party.
Listen, this is what happens when you become an adult.
It's true.
Okay.
It only gets more dull. It only gets more of that, Flo.
I know.
twit.to/AAAPoll343 and you can place your vote. We'll check in on it next week. And that, as they say, is that. We've reached the end of the episode.
We have.
And JC...
And at a formidable hour.
Oh, I know. Yes. We always figure out how to stretch this to almost 2 hours these days.
We're sorry.
We're working on it.
Love you.
We're working... And we keep saying we're working on it, but maybe this is just the length of the show.
I think it's because it's a night show.
Yeah, I know. We're just hanging out. And
all
sometimes
right.
We've had a lot of caffeine.
We gotta let people go.
All right.
Well, maybe that's... Huh? Maybe the show wants to be...
That's kind of what it seems like. The show does want to be this length. No matter what we try, it ends up being this length.
I mean, I feel like we need to have like musical acts and stuff like coming in because...
I have a 90-minute drive down to the new egg set, and this is like the perfect amount of podcast when I'm driving, so I have no complaints.
Nice.
I actually hate it when a podcast runs out before I'm done driving because I'm like, I'm still in the middle of all this hell.
I'm not supposed to touch the screen to select anything, but...
No, you're not. And like sometimes music is just too much. Because it just, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to start another podcast because I'm so close.
Yes, because you're going to get engrossed. It's just like it's engrossed in another narrative. And it's so hard. It's first world problems.
He's listening to podcasts, you know?
Like, why do we do this to ourselves? Just kidding. JC, really appreciate you coming on tonight and talking with us. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is always a blast for me, and I'm a big fan of the work you guys do, so I'm always happy to join the festivities.
Oh, well, anytime, man. So tell people where you want them to follow all the cool stuff you're doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So a few things going on right now. Follow on the socials at Some Gadget Guy on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Instagrams. I'm still cutting phone and tablet reviews over at pocketnow.com, doing some more personal vloggy and opinion stuff on my personal YouTube channel. Like, I did my favorite five phones of 2017, the super subjective biased version of the top five list. Newegg now every Thursday, 10 a.m. Pacific. We're going to be digging into PC guts and hardware and cool tech. And we just kicked off a new podcast, me and my buddy Andrew, where we're starting an online book club called The Geek Book Club. So once a month, we're going to read a cool book and talk about it online. And if people want to join that conversation, they can find us on the Google Play and the iTunes podcast repositories.
Right on. You're busy. You're a busy man.
It's good to be busy. I like being busy. I don't like idle hands.
Yeah, I hear you. Right on. Well, thank you again. We'll have you back very soon. It's always fun getting you on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Flo, what about you? You've been busy as well.
I've been so busy. I just want you guys to know every bottle of this has like a rating of how much caffeine you're getting. It's a rating. There's five different versions. I'm in number two, which is glowing. The number one is mighty. So
you're one step away from mighty.
My eyes are literally twitching right
now.
Oh
my goodness. Don't drink that now.
No, this stuff is so good. It wakes me up. So because it's winter now in California where it gets dark and, you know, at like 4 o'clock, I'm super tired. Anyway, but you know, I drink all this cause I'm doing so much work. you can read. Once in a while, I'm pinning stuff for Android Authority. I'm on here every Tuesday. I'm on the Material Podcast every Thursday. And I'm just on the internet at twitter.com/ohthatflow, which is the best place to keep tabs on me.
It is the best place.
It's the best place to keep tabs on
me. Ever.
Yes.
In the history of places.
It is.
Right on. Thank you, Flo. This is always a lot of fun. Thank you, Victor, for pushing buttons.
Thank you, Victor.
Doing your thing. And occasionally speaking on mic.
Me.
We're getting you on the mic more. It's happening.
Yeah, no problem.
And there we go. That's Victor, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
thank you. You can find me at about... No, sorry. I always almost do that. JasonHowell.net. YellowGoldMusic.com, which, by the way, you're going to want to check on Thursday.
Oh my gosh! Is this your Taylor Swift moment?
This is my...
Are you doing like the, like, are we going to have snakes on Twitter? Like, what's your animal?
Don't put me on the same level as Taylor Swift because you might be horribly disappointed.
We need an animal. Tiger. Everyone respond with a tiger emoji.
Check
needs a squad too.
YellowGoldMusic.com on Thursday morning. You're going to find something out. And if you can't remember that, just find me on Twitter at Jason Howell. I promise you, information's happening, and it's coming on Thursday.
I'm so excited for you. I'm sorry.
I'm excited, I'm really too. Excited. It's been like three dang years I've been working on this stuff. Yes, it's right around the corner, and I can't even tell you how happy I am about that. But it hasn't happened yet, so I should stop talking about it. Best ofs. We do best ofs here every holiday season, wrap up all the best moments of all of our shows, and put out a holiday episode with all of those moments for the week that we're out. If you have a particular moment that you want to offer for any of our shows, you can go to twit.tv/bestof and you can tell us what you know, as much information as you have or as little information as you have. And that's going to help us edit together a really fine episode for you at the end of the year. The more help we get, the easier it is because these are not easy.
It's
to put
true.
Together.
I mean, we've got 52 Ooh. Shows to pull from. That's a lot of shows.
I mean, no matter what, I'm still probably going to sit down with the entire folder of episodes and scan through them because that's what I do every year. And I look for moments that we're laughing.
Oh,
and
is it like going through wedding photos where you're like, oh, I remember when we laughed about that stuff.
I'm scrolling the timeline. Oh. And then I go back and then I watch it and I go, oh, that was funny. Or I go, oh, that wasn't very funny. And then I move on. And then that's the best of episode. Anyways, twit.tv/bestof. But that is it for this week, for this show. Voicemails 347-SHOW-AAA. emails and video mail at AAA@twit.tv. Find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We are also on Reddit. Thanks to Kyle D for maintaining the subreddit. It's twitaaa.reddit.com. Vote up, vote down, vote sideways if you can. Every app from every episode is listed at twit.to/Android apps. You can find show notes and past episodes, everything we talked about today, at our page on the web. It's twit.tv/AAA, and find our episodes wherever you find podcasts. We're everywhere. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, guys.
Woo-hoo!